Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. The line in the sand may soon have a deadline. Reports today indicate the U.S. will ask the U.N. Security Council this week to give Iraq until sometime in January, perhaps as early as January 1st, to withdraw from Kuwait or face a military strike. And the New York Times reports the U.S. appears to have enough votes to pass a use of force resolution. Asked about that this morning, President Bush gave a thumbs-up sign. Baghdad still rejects a pullout, and Saddam Hussein has threatened to rain his missiles on Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states if he's attacked. At the same time, he's reported to have ordered the release of three more American men held hostage. Correspondent Bill Whitaker is in Baghdad.
We are hearing that American hostages, Clyde Jesse, Fred Harrington, and John Stevenson, may be heading home soon. It's believed that they're being released in response to pleas by their family members that the government of Iraq let them go. We do know that Clyde Jesse's wife is here in Iraq and is making a direct personal appeal to the government that her husband be released.
Stevenson's sister Mary met today with Saddam Hussein, later calling him a very nice man. Moscow today took a harder line on its citizens trapped in Iraq. Jonathan Sanders has that.
The Soviet Union is now threatening Iraq. Soviet Foreign Ministry spokesman Vitaly Zhurkin told a news conference today that Iraq was violating the promises it made at the highest level not to impede the movement out of that country of any Soviet citizen who wants to leave. Zhurkin said that unless Iraq immediately removes the obstacles for Soviets to leave for home, the Soviet position towards Iraq will become even tougher than it is now. There are presently more than 3,000 Soviet citizens still in Iraq. Some 1,000 of them have indicated that they want to go home. The Soviet Union invited Iraqi Foreign Minister Aziz to consult about the Persian Gulf crisis. He is in Moscow today, meeting with Soviet Foreign Minister Edward Shevardnadze. Tomorrow, Shevardnadze meets with the foreign minister of Saudi Arabia before flying to New York Wednesday to attend this week's meeting of the United Nations Security Council. Jonathan Sanders, CBS News, Moscow.
Persian Gulf war jitters today drove up London oil prices by $2.70 a barrel to $33.25. From the shipyard electrician who would be president of Poland, a flash of political pique. Correspondent Bert Quint reports from Warsaw.
After what appeared to be a night of soul-searching, Lech Wałęsa said today he will remain in the race for the presidency of Poland. He got more votes in yesterday's election than any of the other five candidates, but not the majority required for first-round victory. Incomplete returns show the runner-up is Stanisław Kaminski, a businessman who made money abroad and campaigned here, calling for an end to the austerity of economic reform and making wild charges against the government. The Polish press called Kaminski a madman. But his appeal was heeded by a surprisingly large number of people made increasingly desperate by the hardships of transition from communism to capitalism, and he won the right to compete with Wałęsa in the runoff scheduled for December 9th. Wałęsa, apparently humiliated by getting no more than 40% of the vote and indignant that people would give Kaminski some 23%, considered withdrawing and leaving the presidency to Kaminski. Today he told reporters he doesn't like it, but he'll stay in the race for the good of Poland. Wałęsa probably will have the support of the faction of Solidarity that abandoned him in favor of Prime Minister Tadeusz Mazowiecki, who came in third, and the odds are he will trounce Kaminski in the runoff. Bert Quint, CBS News, Warsaw.
Barely unpacked from a week in Europe and the Middle East, President Bush is traveling again today, this time to Aguileguas, Mexico, hometown of President Carlos Salinas de Gortari. Their two-day summit there and in Monterrey will focus on trade. Towers of flame have been leaping from four giant storage tanks for jet fuel at Denver's Stapleton International Airport. Bob McNamara reports.
The foreign ministry...
All units shut down the water. All units go to foam.
The fire, just a half a mile from Denver Stapleton's terminal, roared all night. The inferno, fed by nearly 3 million gallons of jet fuel, spilled from fire-ravaged storage tanks, and firefighters helpless to stop it. Denver Fire Department spokesman Mike McNeil.
I think we're going to have to wait and let this thing burn itself out. Basically, it's a holding accident at this time. We're trying very hard not to have anybody injured.
The fire, believed ignited by a broken valve, has engulfed the fuel storage tank farm that is the primary source of fuel for passenger jets. And though airlines such as Continental get their fuel elsewhere, United does not. As a result, today could see that airline facing a critical scheduling problem trying to work around the fire. Yesterday, though Stapleton did allow takeoffs and landings while trying to cope with the nearby blaze, many flights were canceled, delayed, or diverted, a situation that could continue today. Bob McNamara, CBS News, Denver.
Fire crews are mopping up hot spots of a wildfire that destroyed a number of homes in the foothills north of Boulder, Colorado. About 150 people were evacuated, but they're back home now. Police say the man who allegedly started the fire by dragging a burning mattress out of his home is in jail this morning. Floodwaters are starting to retreat in western Washington state. Yesterday, a 50-year-old floating bridge sank into Lake Washington, taking with it a section of Interstate 90 and causing some damage to cables anchoring a new parallel floating bridge. Officials say it could be weeks before that new bridge is reopened. Many Bulgarian workers are on a general strike today, demanding the resignation of Premier Andrei Lukanov and his government of former communists. The story from newsman Owen Bennett Jones.
The strike has been called to protest against the government's handling of the economy and the widespread food and energy shortages. But strike organizers concede that government declarations that the industrial action is illegal do seem to have had some effect. Nevertheless, considerable numbers of people in Bulgaria are on strike today. According to Radio Sofia, 1,200 workers in Bulgaria's only nuclear power plant are not working. The plant provides 40% of the country's electricity, which is already in desperately short supply. The union had hoped to paralyze Sofia's transport system, but while there have been disruptions, the tram and bus services are still running in the capital. Owen Bennett-Jones for CBS News. Sofia.
More than 10,000 workers employed by the U.S. and other NATO services in Germany are staging warning strikes to demand better pay. The members of the unions are striking at several bases, including Ramstein Air Base. In eastern Germany, as we hear from Jesse Schulman, a strike has idled railroads.
Almost all of the 250,000 workers of the former East German National Railways have stayed off the job, bringing freight and long-distance passenger traffic to a halt. Pushing the strikers, fears of massive layoffs in what by Western standards is an overstaffed industry, and fears wages set long before unification won't keep pace with expected increases in rents and other basic costs. Such fears are widely shared in the east of the country, but with the estimated costs of unification skyrocketing and all German elections only days away, observers aren't expecting the government to yield. Jesse Schulman for CBS News, Bonn.
Japan's consumer electronic giant Matsushita confirms it's buying the U.S. entertainment conglomerate MCA, the price of $6.6 billion, the most ever paid by a Japanese company. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials are down 24 points. It's 10 past 7.